Yeah, on the booze cruise, I told Michael about some feelings I used to have for Pam. I had just broken up with Katie and had a couple of drinks, and I confided in the world's worst confidant.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you once again. Before we get into everything, including our interview with Ty Dunn, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Okay. Giants, Eagles.
A different type of meaningless game for the Giants.
Honestly, like a very fun game.
It was fucking awesome. Oh, yeah.
And part of me really did, like, I was getting early season Giants vibes from them. Like, they came out, the offense was atrocious. They couldn't move the ball. Davis Webb looked awful. And then in the second half, like, the Eagles, they just couldn't do anything. Like, I understand it was Jalen Hurts' first game back, but at the end of the day, talking about one of the best offenses in the entire league, MVP candidate, quarterback, coach of the year candidate. And they just looked bad. And
they looked very tight. They looked very, like, nervous. It was weird.
Yeah. And part of me thinks, and this is just a theory that I have, and they had mentioned it once or twice in the broadcast, that they had essentially told Jalen Hurts, like, do not run. Like, you can get out of the pocket, but do not take a big hit. Try to throw the ball away. Like, do not try to run down the field for like a 20-yard gain, 30-yard gain, whatever it is. Put yourself in harm's way. No soft tissue, no big hits. Especially like if you're playing a bunch of backups who probably, you know, they're not the brightest guys and they're all like going, they're serious, like not the smartest. And they're also like out to make a name for themselves. You know what I mean? Like if they can lay a big hit and get some attention, like they're going to do that. Right.
And they almost did it.
They did a few times. Yeah. And I think that might have hampered the Eagles offense a little bit, where Jalen Hurts may have been a little bit, I'll call it like hesitant to make a big play or use his legs. But at the end of the day, even through the air, they didn't look particularly good. And, you know, I think I replied this to one of Justin's tweets, like, Eagles confidence lost is Giants confidence gained. And to have the Giants, like, second and third stringers go out there, put up a performance like that against the Eagles starters who played the entirety of the game, it makes you feel good. Makes you feel good about the coaching staff. It makes you feel a little bit better about the depth that we didn't think that the team had. And to be honest, they probably don't have it, but it was nice to have a game that was meaningless, but still fun in week 18.
Kenny G, $72 million touchdown. We called it last week. We said it was going to happen. That was the one thing we needed this weekend.
So I did pose this question. Is that the most expensive touchdown of all time?
Oh,
now,
yeah.
No, here's the thing.
I was thinking about this.
And I know Nick already knows where I'm going with this. You want to guess? Take a guess.
Well, actually, the touchdown that didn't happen was going to be my answer, but go ahead.
No.
Sometime, it's the Plaxico touchdown. The Plaxico touchdown in the Super Bowl because everybody who had the Patriots.
No. I'm just talking about contract.
Oh,
AAVs.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is not
cute
like
with it.
It's not like a trick question. It's sort of a trick question.
Well, I'm a self-identified football savant, so give me a hint. I can figure this out.
It's just, you know, a player catching a touchdown.
Yeah, with the most expensive contract, and that was his only one.
Right.
Can you give me a year? Just give me the year.
No. I don't have anyone in mind. I'm just saying I think that this might be the only touchdown type.
I don't think another there's ever going to be a contract like this.
If an eligible offensive lineman catches a touchdown, technically that would be the most expensive touchdown of all time.
Yeah. Now you want to get cute.
Like if Andrew Thomas signs a big contract and then catches a touchdown, that might be the most expensive touchdown of all time.
Who's the highest paid tackle in the NFL? Isn't it like Landry Tunsil?
It could be that. I'm trying to think of quarterbacks who've caught a pass.
True. That's also, yeah.
Did Mahomes catch touchdown pass? Never?
I don't think so.
Brady had caught that ball.
Yes, if Brady caught that ball, that's the answer.
But even then, his contract is not that, like, I mean.
Nah, it wasn't that crazy in New England.
The Kenny Golladay thing is so funny because, so Darius Slay.
Well, hold on, let me pause real quick. if you're listening to this and you want to put in the effort, you tweet us and you let us know the most expensive touchdown of all time and whether or not it's Kenny or if it's some like bizarro world stuff. Yes. Anyway, go on. Darius Slay.
Darius Slay. Who got – he didn't get beat. It was a good coverage. But then he went on Twitter right after the game.
That was weird.
That was – to me, that's a mentally weak player. I said it after the game.
That's an insecure move.
That's
a huge insecure move. Like, first of all, it was great coverage. Like, I came away like, that's really good coverage by Darius Slay. Kenny Galladay just made an awesome catch. And then he just goes on Twitter and pulls up a tweet of James Bradbury getting cut. And he's like, thank you for this. Like, yeah. What are you, like, 12? You're like – what the hell are we doing? But the Kenny Galladay touchdown was awesome. The only thing I wished would have happened was I wish the Giants had a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter on a game-winning drive. Like, I just wanted that. I wanted that so badly. Or a game-tying drive. A game-tying drive.
I was rooting so hard for overtime. Like, could you imagine how pissed Sirianni would be?
Yeah.
If, like, his first stringers had to go to overtime in a Week 18 game?
Yeah, everything
and
on
you
the
know
line
the
too.
Dable would have done it given the opportunity.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing was, well, if they made the field goal, remember that? I don't even know what it was. It was a fake field goal attempt or it's just special team sucks. But anyway, outside of Graham Gano,
I'm saying that's what happens when you don't let Graham Gano cook.
Yeah, exactly. If they would have let the greatest kicker in Giants history kick that field goal, then all of a sudden it's a one possession game in the fourth quarter. And you know Davis Webb, who was running over Eagle players all day, or in the second half. I would have had a shot. It was fun. I had a lot of fun watching that game. And we had Ty Dunn on later on. And you guys can see. But, dude, I'm just so confident in Brian Daboll and this coaching staff. Like, Ethan, I know you're at, like, an all-time high, I think. I'm right there with you, man. Like, these dudes can fucking coach, man. Like, they know. You give them fucking – anything and they
you gave them Richie James and Isaiah Hodgins and they made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like they just
it's like like if you're like a really good salesperson, like there are a bunch of idioms that you like you could sell shit to a pig, you could sell ice to an Eskimo. Like what's the coaching equivalent of that? Because whatever it is, Brian Daboll, Wink Martindale, and Mike Kafka are like, you know, they could do that.
It's not just the fact that they're X's and O's guys. Dude, they can motivate people.
Yeah.
Like they know how to talk to people, they know the human element of it. Like so many people that just know the X's and O's and let me draw up this play, but like
I will say, and let me say this on the motivational front. Will, cover your ears. When Kenny Galladay caught that touchdown, Saquon was going absolutely apeshit on the sidelines. And not in like a sarcastic manner. Was just like gassing him up, like, let's go. That was cool to see.
And Dable goes sits next to him, give him a big hug. That to me, that should tell you guys the difference between Kadarius Toney and Kenny Galladay.
Yes.
Like, see how much the coaching staff continues to appreciate Galladay, even though, I mean, let's just face it, they would part ways with him tomorrow if they could. But it's just it's such a awesome feeling, man, when you have that. Like holy shit, these dudes can actually fucking coach. That's a great feeling.
Yeah.
We got to start the Mike Kafka bad rumors really soon.
Next year.
Wink Martindale might be this year. Arizona.
No, he's stop. These guys are not going anywhere.
You not this year. Next year, though.
You know, you follow next you Brian. We got to call him Baldy, right?
Yeah, Baldy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, and this is a great comparison. He calls Wink Martindale. He compares Wink Martindale to Bruce Arians. He's like,
I saw that.
He's the defensive version of, you know, Bruce Arians, where it's like always interchangeable defense. He can do crazy shit. And I'm like, that sort of makes sense. Just hopes it's a great feeling. And guess what, guys? I am going to Minnesota.
Oh, Snacks got off the no-fly list?
Snacks is still up in the air, but
listen, because he's still on the no-fly list. Okay.
I can't wait for people, man. I gotta go to Minnesota. I have to go.
So you're going solo at the moment?
I might take a brother-in-law. I'm going to link up with LPG, Joe, good friend.
Yep.
So I have some things lined up. I'm not going to be an asshole walking to Minnesota by myself. but yeah, I am going to Minnesota. I'm actually going to book my ticket right after we finish recording this.
Nice.
I've had so much fun this season. And just start to finish, dude. Like, it's been fucking awesome, man. Like, it's from the – think about where we started, right? Week one, all that shit that happened in week one to like week 18 where we're fucking like enjoying Davis Webb starting a game. Like, it's just been a fucking marvelous season. And now we're just playing with house money.
And let's get nuts. Let's get nuts.
Dude, the Giants are going to be dangerous. Like,
dude, I think they can make noise. I told you guys last week. Me too. I'm going to Minnesota to win a fucking game.
I'm already talking about round two. Like, I've written off Kirk Cousins. Yeah.
Are you looking at, if this team wins, I might be going here. If this team, like, you're doing that too, right? Yeah. Love the confidence. Love the confidence.
First of all, insulting, but like also very funny. I saw a tweet this morning. It was like, the Miami Dolphins have now overtaken the Giants in terms of biggest playoff underdog in Vegas. It's like, bro, how was a team with like Noodle Brain Tua, Teddy Bridgewater, and Skylar Thompson ever given odds greater than the Giants? Like,
well, they're factoring in Tua coming back.
Even
Tua,
he stinks.
No, but Tua, that Buffalo game, that second one, was a really good game. And if Tua comes back.
Two?
No, the one in Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
They played him tough. They did play him tough.
Whatever. The I have NFC, no faith
in Tua after four Tua concussions. Stinks.
Yeah, you got faith in Daniel Jones, Ethan?
Absolutely. Going into Minnesota.
My man.
Dude, this goes back to what we spoke about for like three consecutive weeks about the Vikings. That defense allows the Giants to do what they do best.
Their offensive line is also fucked up too. They lost.
Dude, the Giants are going to beat the Vikings. I mean, we'll record later in the week, but I've never been more confident about this team. Like, we will be going round two in the playoffs. And to be honest, like, bro, give me the Eagles. I don't care. Give me the Cowboys. No, I don't care.
The only team
in the NFC this is that actually scares me are the 49ers.
And they shouldn't, by the way, either. But I love
this. You're an idiot, but that's fine.
I love this.
Nick Bosa is going to eat Evan Neal's lunch. Evan Neal in hell.
Let me explain to you. If you're a Giant fan right now, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't believe your team can't beat anybody in the NFC. AFC is a different story. But you got to be confident. And it's been a fun ride. The AFC
quarterback picture is just
horrifying
to look at.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The worst quarterback in the playoffs is Tua on the AFC side.
Yes.
I mean, like, Lamar is the second worst. Like,
is he going to play?
By the way,
he might.
The that's crazy. Brandon Staley, I wrote this down. It's just a complete fucking moron.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this for weeks.
He's got to get fired regardless of what happens. 100%. I don't care if they win a playoff game. He's got to go, man. For the love of God, get Justin Herbert a coach, man.
Please. And get Joe Lombardi out of there, too. I mean, red zone play calling is some of the worst in the league.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Him playing the starters. But listen, I'm going to Minnesota. I'm going to book my flight after we finish here. I'm very excited. And you guys want to go, Ethan, Minnesota?
I cannot go. We'll talk round two.
I definitely can't go to Minnesota.
We'll talk round two.
I love this confident Ethan, man. He's already thinking. It's going to be fun, though. I'm going to Minnesota. Nick Gates said that.
Check the dates. So this might be tough. So the first game is going to be on Sunday. So week two, I'm actually going to be in Vegas.
Check this itinerary. Fly in Sunday. Come watch
me in Vegas?
No.
I got to be in Vegas for work. That's why. So
I hate taking – I took a work trip with somebody one time where I was pleasure, he was work.
No, but Sunday when I'm flying in.
That's what they all say.
I
got to
check my flight. Oh, God, I really hope.
I went with somebody.
I really hope the Giants have the early game.
You're already banking on the second week of the playoffs. God damn!
I'm telling you, it's a given. Like, nah, it is a given.
They will.
I respect football too much. I do not have confidence in my team. I never have confidence.
Politically correct football.
That's not politically correct. That's just fearing God.
Football. Listen,
I fear God. Okay, I've seen the Giants mess up way too many times.
But you're playing with house money. Confidence is out the window. You're like, anything can happen. You know, it's like, who cares? Here's the thing: if they win, right, and let's say San Francisco wins, then they automatically will go to Philly. That's going to be the late game on Sunday. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I will not go to Philadelphia. I went there one time.
Oh, I value my life. I'm good.
Yeah, I went to Philadelphia one time for a game, and I told them like good game, and like nobody would shake my hand. they won the game too. That's the crazy part about it. I'm not, but Minnesota. Yeah, I'm in. Like Nick Gates said, it's a soft crowd.
Yeah,
and it's a
soft.
And it's a great, great stadium up there with MetLife.
Oh
I think.
No, up there. I hate you. I despise your MetLife takes.
It's indoor, so that's good. Not cold. You know.
Oh, you like that now, huh?
Oh, listen, that was not good. If they were playing in that University of Minnesota stadium, remember that fucking piece of shit stadium?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Blair Walsh does.
I would not go there. Right. But yeah, US Bank Stadium. I got a hotel like half a mile away.
Nice.
This is a business trip. Fly in Sunday morning, fly out Monday morning. I'm ready.
How many snaps can you give the Giants if they need the Moise?
Oh, I think I could. I think I could. I messed up my
four or five.
I told you the story. I messed up my calf. It's like my groin on a hike. It's still not the same. Sometimes I wake up and it hurts like a motherfucker. But dude, I'm 6'3", like 270 on a good day. I can line up places.
You'd be like a Pac-12 guard.
Yeah. No. I'm not big enough to be a guard. Those dudes are like 300. I think you can line me up at tackle. Maybe those blocking tight ends.
Tackle at 220. Yeah.
Okay. Who did the Giants that blocking tight end the Giants used to have? Tomlinson.
Remember no. You're more the size of who's the guy that got from the Raiders like years ago? He's supposed to be like a good pass catcher.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh God. Years ago, like how many years ago?
I feel like it was like six, seven years ago. Hold on. I got a Giants.
Was he on the Giants too?
Yeah, that's why I met Ed.
Myers.
Yes. Brandon Myers.
I'm a football savant, baby. Football Brandon savant. Myers. But I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. And playoffs, man. I was telling Nick this. We're not talking about like we got to fire this coordinator. We got to fire this GM.
No, although I'm still like I always get excited for Black Monday, the NFL offseason. Like there are so many interesting names that are floating around now. Not for the Giants, I'm just speaking general interest. Like teams that have really tough decisions to make, especially if they have new GMs, new coaches. Like it's gonna be some names on the move. It's gonna be a real fun offseason.
I don't understand firing a coach and keeping a general manager. I just
The Cardinals did not do that.
The Broncos did. The Panthers did.
I think the Texans are going to end up firing the GM anyway. I think they're going to wait to get the guy they want lined up, and then they'll ex Caserio.
I just don't understand what they're doing.
Adam Peters and D'Amico Ryans make perfect sense in Houston. I should be an NFL owner.
Nah, D'Amico Ryans said he's not going to Houston. Like I saw that report this morning.
Oh, yeah, he did? He said that? I don't believe
it. It's a coaching death sentence. You're a black coach going to Houston.
It's an atrocity to football.
Yeah. If you want to hire Josh McCown, just fucking hire Josh McCown. Do whatever the fuck you want to do. It's but ridiculous. Don't do what they did is just it's stupid.
From the owner that brought you inmates running the asylum comes firing two black head coaches after 1 year apiece.
Yeah. And David Culley actually overachieved, by the way, too.
So did Lovie Smith.
Yeah, we can talk about Lovie. He played hard, but
he's not a long term answer, but
Culley got wins. David Culley won games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they were projected to finish like zero wins.
Yes.
They played hard every week.
It's a travesty. They got to get a new owner in there. I'm with you guys. Badly. What they did is wrong. But yeah.
Shout out Aaron Rodgers. Well, that's
rest in piss, Bozo.
Current future former Packer.
Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to retire.
I think so too.
I think he's going to retire.
You see, he's dating the owner of the Bucks' daughter.
I saw that.
Really?
She's
like 25.
The one that Drake was very weird about during the finals 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sucks for Aaron because the Packers do this every single year. It just happened a week early. The amount of mistakes that they make in games, it's you got to look at LaFleur at some point, right? Like,
what? Yeah.
He went 13-3 3 years in a row. You're going to one bad season? I mean,
no, it's the decisions, man. Like, how many games have the Packers lost because of just like stupid things that they've done?
That's fair.
Like, we're at the point where they're pushing trainer. Like, I just forget about the coach, forget about the coaching decisions, just the other dumb shit. Like, it's like,
I will say though, like, they like great situation. Like, you bring, like, if Jordan Love is
decent,
like Jordan Love, Christian Watson, Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon, like, that's a good team.
Yeah. The defense is talented. Not very good, but it's talented. It didn't play well this year. It's talented.
They miss Rashawn Gary. And here's the thing. Every year I go into the offseason, I have a friend that's a Packer fan. I'm like, listen, you gotta get your run defense in order.
Yes.
And every year they don't. It's like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, but they miss Rashawn Gary a lot, I thought, especially yesterday.
Yeah.
But the Lions.
Good for the Lions. Your boy Dan Campbell.
Yeah, Ethan's boy. Dan Campbell cries a lot. That's all I got to say about him. But when I saw him
yesterday, I cry when I watch Dan Campbell cry.
Yo, when I saw that interview, that NBC interview he did, I was like, yo, this dude might – he's going to – what did he say in the introductory press conference? We're going to rip kneecaps or whatever?
Bite kneecaps.
Yeah. Yo, I thought he was legitimately going to bite somebody's kneecap. But he was like, I'm not going. They're not going. It's like, okay. Oh, shit. Whatever you say, man. Hey, Dan Campbell's an intimidating dude. And so is their GM. Their GM is a pretty tall, you know, intimidating guy too. But Lions building something special. You got to give it to him. But Dan Campbell, man, I'm not going, nobody's going. It's like, all right. That's what he said. You saw the interview, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just take it easy, man.
Yeah.
Just take it easy.
All right, man. They're not going. You got it. Great win for them. I wish Seattle would have lost. I would have loved to see Detroit in the playoffs.
Me too.
Their offensive coordinator is going to be head coach too one day.
100%. I was just thinking that.
Are the Dallas Cowboys going to be one and done in the playoffs?
Yes.
Yes.
Cool. I saw.
You guys are smart, man.
Yeah.
Tampa beating them is so obvious.
Yeah. Buffalo's going to the Super Bowl.
I can't say anybody in the AFC definitively is going to the Super Bowl.
I don't know.
Anybody could beat anybody in the AFC.
I think the Bengals.
I have this growing shtick.
I always like the Bengals too.
I think it's the Bengals.
They're the deepest team.
Their offensive line is not.
They've got the best defense of all of the good offensive teams.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can go to Buffalo and win.
We'll see.
I think so. But that's why we play the games.
Yeah.
Buffalo's motivated, man. They're playing for something.
They're not losing another game.
They're not losing another game. I've been saying that since week one, that Buffalo's not losing a game.
And I mean, you say that, and then, you know. Matt Patricia keeping it close.
Yeah.
That's a good point. They have a lot of emotions, man. Come on. Can't do that. Matt Patricia.
That's supposed to motivate you.
Cliff Kingsbury, Patriots offensive coordinator.
Yes, why not? Absolutely.
Alabama. He'll be like the Alabama offensive coordinator next year. He's going to take a year.
You like that one, Ethan, right?
Yes.
Bill O'Brien.
Nah, they don't have the personnel for that.
Him and Belichick would clash so hard.
One other thing I want to ask you guys, have answered my questions very intelligently. Jim Harbaugh is a better coach than Sean Payton, right? Just so we're...
Ooh.
That's tough.
No, it's not tough at all.
I think so. Okay, Sean Payton hasn't done a lot in recent years. Like, he's got, like, the counting stats, but the Saints teams probably should have won at least one more Super Bowl over the last 10 years.
Jim Harbaugh is a football savant, just like me. the work he's done with quarterbacks, bar none. Arizona, if you're listening, you call Jim Harbaugh and you tell him, hey, come here, and then you can run my GM search too. And all I ask is, I'm just stuck with Kyler Murray for 2 years. If you can fix him, great. If not, we'll figure something out. But
yeah,
Jim Harbaugh, I think he's maxed out at Michigan. That's all I'm saying.
I think he's not trying to stay through the whatever violations they're going to get dinged with.
Yeah, the violation, to me, I said this after the game, I think he's above Michigan. If he leaves
Michigan's one of the 10 best jobs in the country.
Michigan is not one of the 10 best jobs in the country.
Yes, it is.
Michigan is, everything is based off their name. They overachieved by getting Harbaugh to come to Michigan.
He's literally a Michigan guy. That speaks to the cachet of the job, that somebody would leave the NFL for a college job and stay there as long as he has.
Well, he left San Francisco because
Trent Baalke,
pulling it up, the 10 highest paid college coaches.
He's not the top 10.
If they fire, if Jim Harbaugh leaves Michigan, you think they can get a coach of that caliber to go coach Michigan?
They would be promoting a coordinator.
Just look at what they've had before. They were talking about the Virginia Tech guy, Sheehan or whatever. I forgot what his name was. Dude, Michigan is everything Michigan is based off name.
Yes, it is.
They're not Ohio State.
I'm not saying they are. I'm saying that's one of the 10, 15 best jobs in the entire country. Because you will have, they will be loyal to you till the end. They will, Harbaugh should have gotten fired after the pandemic season. He should have.
It was a joke that he was even being talked about that he was going to get fired. Who are you going to get that's better than Harbaugh?
I'm not saying they should have done it. I'm saying it was a real conversation. No, I know. It would have happened. He had to take a massive pay cut. Like, he cut his salary in half to stay.
100% with you. My point is,
He's a very good coach. I'm not arguing that.
If Alabama's job opens up, it is a sought-after job. Georgia, sought-after
job. Not before Nick Saban got there.
You're right, but now it is. Nick Saban's been there for like 20 years. Your boy Ohio State, Ryan Day, if he leaves. I mean, Urban Meyer went there. What I'm saying is, you're not going to get a situation where a guy who's a top, or even not even a top-notch, but like a coach with a real good resume, say, you know what? I'm going to leave my job and go coach at Michigan. You're either going to go and you're going to get somebody that went to Michigan, which ironically or coincidentally, Jim Harbaugh was that. He went to Michigan. He was a great coach. But you are not going to get, they're not one of those schools that I think
they could have gotten Luke Fickell. I think if Luke Fickell didn't go to Wisconsin, I think they could have gotten Luke Fickell, who's a very good coach. I would have taken a shot on him. Does Luke Fickell have that resume? Group of five level? Yeah. He took Cincinnati to the playoff. That's a really good college coach.
He got Desmond Ridder drafted. Yeah. By a real NFL team.
Yeah.
So my point is the Arizona Cardinals are they're not a sought after job.
No.
So a guy like Jim Harbaugh goes there. Jim Harbaugh is above the Arizona Cardinals. So you have no choice but to be patient and see if it'll work out.
The carousel will be interesting. There's a lot of good candidates out there. It's just a matter of who's going to go where. And there's a lot of interesting guys. Sean Payton is interesting. You could probably talk me into Cliff as an OC somewhere. New England's probably a safer bet, but I could see Bill O'Brien coming back to the NFL after a couple of years at the Alabama.
Greatest coach in Texan history, Bill O'Brien.
Massively correct. Him and Harbaugh, and there's one other guy, are the only three college coaches ever to have an over 500 record at the NFL. And Jimmy Johnson. Those are the only three guys to have coached mostly at the college level and have an over 500 record at the NFL level.
I'm just happy David Shaw's name is no longer talked about as
Stanford's been miserable.
Yeah.
Did he get fired from Stanford?
He resigned.
He resigned. Yeah.
I love that. Mutually agreed apart ways.
Yeah.
Yes. The best thing. I mutually agreed to part.
That's what they made it seem like. No. Steve Kime took the medical leave. I think they tried to phrase that the Cliff as mutually agreed to part ways.
Yeah.
Cliff's gonna go get his bag and sit in that nice ass house with his supermodel girlfriend and chill.
All I'm saying is, if you have an opening, your first call should be to Jim Harbaugh.
I think he's the best coach available. It depends if Sean Payton actually does bring what's his face with him. The defensive coordinator. If he brings Fangio with him, I could see an argument for Sean Payton.
I mean, can't Jim Harbaugh bring Fangio with him? Wasn't he his defensive coordinator in San Francisco?
I think at one point, yeah.
All right, we're putting the listeners to sleep. All right. But we want him to stick around for Ty Dunn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps up our Giants-Eagles recap. We will be back later this week to preview the Giants playoff game. And now our interview with Ty Dunn.
We now welcome in our guest, Ty Dunn of GoLongTD.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Ty Dunn. He's written a lot of stuff about the Giants over the last year, really. And honestly, this interview is a year in the making because you and I have been kind of exchanging messages back and forth about the Giants for a year now. Ty, what's up, my man?
Good to be here, man. Thanks so much for having me. You're right. It's long overdue. We've kind of lived in this DM Twitter world. It's always nice to me we can make it as real as possible here via
absolutely Miracles. You're the first guest who has a better beard than me. My beard's kind of under construction right now, but you got it really worked out. Well, listen, the Giants, it's been a hectic 12 months for them. Everything they've been through. I really want to go back to that quarterback sneak against Washington in week 18. And everything
that's where all fans love to go back to, right? Just a magical time.
Right. The pieces that you wrote about the dysfunction with the Giants organization and then to where they are today. That's why I want to start with that quarterback sneak, because I think that's when it really triggered for Giants ownership that, hey, this is not working. How did the Giants get here from where they were 12 months ago?
Ooh, by thinking outside of the box once and for all, right? I mean, this was an organization that had, for the lack of a better term, has been pretty incestual, just kind of likes to reshuffle the chairs on the Titanic, and has been just so reluctant to get outside of that protected class and bring in an independent thinker to fix things. It seemed like that was where this organization was trending again, right? These reports that get leaked out aren't accidental. When you hear Kevin Abrams, you know, and obviously very good at his job and highly respected, but has been there for better part of three decades, is going to be promoted, and that Joe Judge would stick around and, as you know, kind of take on even more power than he had probably. And then the losses just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And it was the best possible thing for the New York Giants, because Merrill's had no choice, right? They had to think outside the box. They had to go hunting for a legitimate general manager who knows how to build a team from scratch, and a head coach who checks every possible box like Brian Daboll does. So to answer your question, how did we get here? By hitting rock bottom. the Giants had to hit rock bottom in just about every way, and they did. Here they are in the playoffs.
And they bounced back. I mean, rocks don't typically bounce back to you like the way, you know, this Giants bounce back is. Brian Daboll, Joe Shane, you're very familiar with Buffalo and the Buffalo Bills organization. And it's been a year now, and Giant fans have seen who Brian Daboll is and who Joe Shane is. But I think the most remarkable thing is the fact that how sort of, you know, tied they were in terms of how what they could do in year one, right? Like they, you know, they had the two top 10 picks, and that was big, but they didn't have salary cap space. They had these bad contracts, but they could not move off of all of them. They couldn't do a lot of work with them. And the fact that they've sort of taken, you know, players that probably in July and August, Nick and I and a lot of Giant fans were like, these guys are not, you know, long-term answers. They've turned them into, I don't want to say cornerstone pieces, because there's only a few cornerstone pieces an organization have, but these are guys that you're like, shit, I want this guy back. Like, I want Julian Love back. And more importantly, the quarterback, Daniel Jones. Typically, a new regime comes in, they want their guy, right? I'm on record saying if this last year's draft class, meaning 2021, was the 2022 draft class, I do believe the Giants are taking a quarterback. But the fact that the quarterback class wasn't strong, they were still tied to Daniel Jones for at least another year, it sort of played perfectly out the way that you could want as a Giant fan, where now you're like, hey, we might have the quarterback of the future. And you wrote a great piece about that, and I want to go a little bit more in detail about how did we get here with Daniel Jones, because we were in a different place, you know, this time last year.
That's so true. It was, you know, when it comes to Daniel Jones, he's just so fascinating to me, because he can basically be whatever you want him to be. And I'm still not even really sure like where I stand on it long-term. I think he absolutely warrants 2023, bare minimum. He deserves an extension if the number's right for both parties. But you can look at the negative. You can be a cynic when it comes to him and think, you know what? Brian Daboll's a genius. He can twist those X's and O's in ways few can. And he's a developer of the quarterback position. He's been around Josh Allen from ground zero, built him up into an MVP candidate. Has he maxed out Daniel Jones? Is this as good as it gets? Because for all the great vibes around this quarterback and this coach and this team, we've seen this happen with other teams where they get to the offseason and it's, oh, Lamar Jackson is available. Okay. How many picks does it take, Baltimore? Like, what do you want, Lamar? Here's your blank check. I mean, things can change like that in pro football, for even though everybody's kind of in this lovey-dovey phase. That being said, I'd probably kind of lean the other direction. I do think, I mean, Daniel Jones is tough as shit. Like, what can you say? I mean, that game in London is what kind of started getting me thinking about this quarterback through a different lens, because you looked at the numbers and it's blah, but you actually watched the game with your own eyeballs. I mean, he took shots. I think that was the game. He was like gushing blood and yeah. He had a bad ankle and he just had a slew Saquon of big third hurt. Down throws. Exactly. Right. And that was when we're still kind of thinking Green Bay is a Super Bowl contender. New York had answers for Green Bay again and again and again. Daniel Jones had answers for Green Bay. And I think if you watch him, like you guys do, you're watching every snap. His game does kind of transcend the stats. Like this is somebody that is tough from the inside and out, mentally tough, as Brian Daboll made sure he was in training camp when he designed practices in a way to make Daniel Jones look bad, make Tyrod Taylor look good, to kind of build up that pressure and see how he would respond to it. Passed with flying colors, was very, very happy with what he saw. That's what you want out of the quarterback position. I've always felt like it's so much more than just, you know, putting up big numbers and, you know, having that elite physical trait. Do guys in the huddle want to fight for you? I mean, because when it gets into the fourth quarter and you have to win a close game, you need a quarterback like that just kind of transcends the numbers. Daniel Jones has done that. This is somebody that teammates love to play for. Just was talking to Isaiah Hodgins about him. And he said, he goes into the weight room and Daniel Jones is already there throwing a medicine ball around. Like he just is he's a hard worker to his core and a leader. That stuff means something, right? Like,
of course
I get it. You might want something better. Who doesn't want something better, right? Who doesn't want Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow? But good luck trying to find that guy. If you can't get one of those top five quarterbacks, life can be pretty damn good with Daniel Jones. And as Chris Sims said, like build an effing team, go sign the right guys, go draft the right guys, load up, and you can build a Super Bowl contender with a maxed out Daniel Jones. If he can be a top 10 quarterback, which he can be, you can contend with a guy like this.
So one of the things about the Giants that's so interesting going forward is this was kind of supposed to be a whatever year to see what was going to happen and going forward. Now, this is a golden opportunity for a GM and a coach who have more or less carte blanche to do whatever they want going forward. In terms of where the Giants go from here looking forward, what types of opportunities and what types of things should the Giants be looking for to kind of take advantage of all of this opportunity in front of them?
Such a good question, because that's what gives me hope for the Giants more than anything is we can sit here and talk about the quarterback situation for hours upon hours upon hours. But I mean, they've got the right GM and they've got the right head coach. I had to pull it up. One of my buddies, Matthew Fairburn, did a big story on Brandon Bean and Joe Shane and kind of traveled with them on the scouting trail. And this just sticks with me forever. So he's literally traveling with the Bills front office. And he wrote that, this is, you know, a few years ago, so the numbers are going to be a little off now. Shane has been married 14 years. He and his wife have a 12-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old son, and a daughter who was born the Tuesday after the 2018 draft. A few weeks ago, Shane looked at his Marriott app and saw he spent more than 2,600 nights in those hotels. That's 14 years of marriage and 8 years of his life spent in Marriott's. And obviously you hear that and it's unbelievably depressing, right? You would much rather be at your kids' youth sports games. And if there's anecdotes in here about like missing his son's football game and you miss a lot of family time. But the number one criticism that I got from a lot of these personnel people and scouts that were let go by the Giants is that this was an organization that they were being run by people who just weren't at these games. They didn't have their eyes on these college games nearly enough. Granted, you got to be a different beast to be a GM, to be an area scout, to be anybody running a football team. And the Giants were letting those people kind of leave the building. Now you bring in a Joe Shane who's done that work, right? He's cut his teeth. He has seen every possible quarterback you can possibly see on the scouting trail. He's going to make the sound decisions at every position that gets the New York Giants to long-term playoff contention. Because he's lived it. I mean, he was there in Buffalo for this search where they easily could have taken Josh Rosen. Everybody here wanted Josh Rosen. When they took Josh Allen, Bills fans were depressed. They were pissed. The draft party, there's a pall over the draft party. They were not happy. They took the right guy. They take Rosen, everybody would have been fired. So I think living that decision firsthand accounts for something. Bringing in Brian Daboll, who players want to run through a wall for means something. I have a hard time seeing the Giants screwing this up somehow. Where before, with a Dave Gettleman and a Joe Judge and Chris Pettit and all these guys in charge that just don't know what the hell they're doing, of course you're going to be a hamster on the wheel making bad decisions again and again and again and again. So I don't know what positions they look for, what players they look for. They need a wide receiver, and good luck signing one in free agency because there's not many available. They're going to have to get creative via trade or something. But I think they have the right people in charge who will make those right decisions. You know, speaking of trade, that could have backfired on the Bills too. They traded for Antonio Brown. That was a done deal. And then AB didn't want to play for the Bills. They put Stephon Diggs, and then Diggs and Josh Allen become best friends. So going through that has to mean something as well if you're Joe Shane.
Yeah, I think you make such a great point when you talk about previous Giant regimes. It's philosophical alignment and the timeline, right? Like, you have a first-year head coach, you have a GM on the hot seat. You have a head coach on the hot seat, you got a first-year GM, where it's like head coach got to win now, GM has to win now. Head coach is still trying to, you know, build his team, install his philosophies. But the Giants have that here. One of the most impressive things about Joe Shane and Brian Daboll both is, even though they're philosophically aligned, if you look at what else is around them, like you look at Joe Shane's right-hand man, his assistant general manager, Brandon Brown, came from the Philadelphia Eagles. They didn't previously work together. You look at Brian Daboll, who 9 times out of 10, when an offensive coach gets hired, when an offensive coordinator gets hired as a head coach, what does he do? He calls plays. And then he brings somebody along with him that, you know, could be the quarterback coach, but he's calling plays. Well, what did Brian Daboll do? He goes and hires Mike Kafka from Kansas City, who's never called plays before, and gives him a play sheet. You know, that to me just shows that they are, not only are they, you know, the core of Shane and Daboll philosophically aligned, but they're also aligned with the mindset that, hey, we don't have all the answers. We're going to need that expertise from Philadelphia, from Kansas City, to come in and sort of help us build what we want to build. And I think that goes unspoken a lot, but that is, it's so impressive what they've done in terms of building out not just the coaching staff, but the front office.
Yeah. I love that point. And it gets so overlooked by fans, because that time of year, that January, that February, where a head coach is hired, then they build a staff. It's so important. And it's probably way more important than the first wave of players that you're either cutting or signing, because you need a good staff and you need people who are going to challenge you and get you thinking outside the box, outside of your comfort zone. I think the common theme is just swallowing egos. You know, Daboll, Shane, they don't have egos relative to what you usually see out of GMs and coaches in pro football. And that was a big swing in that regard. You go from an organization with quite a few egos, you know, with the assholes need not applying sign right on the desk, when, you know, people who work for you say, well, you're the biggest one in the room, Dave Gettleman. Go from that to Joe Shane, and you go from, you know, Joe Judge and those legendary press conferences, if you want to call them legendary, to a selfless Brian Daboll. That's a big swing. I mean, I did a lot of work on the Minnesota Vikings too. And I'm telling you, Mike Zimmer, it was to the extreme. These players, they dreaded going to work for Mike Zimmer. I mean, he just brought everybody down. When people were calling for his job, he brought it into the meetings with coaches. I mean, Terrence Newman went on the record and was so honest. I mean, here's a Zim guy. He played for him in Dallas, Cincinnati, Minnesota, and coached with him. And it's like, dude, you're complaining about possibly getting fired, losing your job. You got a guaranteed contract. You can go on a ranch. You're good. These players, you know, they get cut. They lose their job. They got to uproot their families. They might be out of football. They might have to look for a whole new profession. I think Daboll gets it. He just gets that players live in that world. Kevin O'Connell, Minnesota, he gets it. He played the game, and Dable's been around the game, and it's hard to quantify, right? Like, I don't know what numbers you kind of put to it that the show that you want a coach who just treats his players like human beings, but it equates to wins. Minnesota won a hell of a lot of one-score games this year. The Giants won a hell of a lot of one-score games this year, late in a game. And how many of these games come down to last drive? You just need players who are going to fight for every freaking inch. And they're going to want to do it for a coach that they love, that they believe in, that's going to shoot them straight. That's the other thing. It's not like he's coddling his players. Isaiah Hodgins said, like, you screw up, Daboll's going to let you know you screwed up. So you still have that element. You know, I always saw Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. was always the gold standard in that regard. You know, he was a player's coach, but it would get contentious in there. I mean, I remember Chad Greenway telling me Mike Tomlin was his coach, and I think Tomlin was maybe younger than most of the players at that point in Minnesota. He said Tomlin would call your ass out. He would chew you out if he had to. And yet, guys loved him. They could go to his room with any question, any concern, life or football. That's such a difficult needle to thread as a head coach. I mean, it's so hard to be real in that room and not come across as phony or fake or forced. The Giants have two real ones in charge of the organization. So that's you're going to see it lead to wins one way or another with whoever's a quarterback.
What's made the Giants so interesting this year is, to your point, is they've been in a lot of close games, and in years past, the Giants would find a way to lose them. They would always find a way to lose those close games. Joe Judge had so many one-score game losses, Pat Shurmur, so many one-score, McAdoo, all of those guys. And then this year, arguably with the least talented Giants team of the last 5 or 6 years, they went on to win. This is the first winning record the Giants have had since they made the playoffs in 2016. Just to your point about there not being a way to quantify this, but there is something to it. Like there's something innate in good coaches that find a way to get more out of guys, that especially less talented guys. The Giants were down to third and fourth string corners a lot of the season, especially after some of the injuries they've suffered. Is there anything other than just lots of experience? Like Dable's been around the game. He was at Alabama. He was in Buffalo, Cleveland, Miami, so many different stops. Is there something to that? Or is that just kind of, you know, Dable gets it?
Yeah, I think that he has conditioned his players to be ready for those moments too. I'm sure he's simulating drills and moments in practice that can kind of prepare these players for, okay, it's third and eight. There's a minute and 32 left. We got to have this play. Here's what we're going to run. Here's exactly how we want it run. They're just ready for those moments, whether it's, you know, Richie James or Odell Beckham Jr. in his prime running that route. I think that, that we forget that these are human beings and that these aren't just robots. You know, they're not just X's and O's on a whiteboard, and you're not just scheming things up, and he can scheme with the best of them. So that's part of it too. Clearly is he's calling the right plays in the right moments, but these players just seem so prepared for those moments too, where in the past, you know, Daniel Jones and, you know, the players that he had around him, it would get late in the game. And if they're even in the game, things would just go wrong one way or another. So, you know, I think that they love playing for him. He's calling the right plays, and probably maybe the most important is the third aspect of just having the balls to believe in your guys late in games. Damn. Where, you know, if Joe Judge is calling a quarterback sneak on third down, I mean, that's just you're just telling your entire team, I don't believe in you. Like, we stink. Let's punt. Let's give this game away. Go for it. Right. That players love that. And he did that right out of the chute in that Tennessee game. Yep. Going for two. Like, let's do it. Let's go for it. What are we scared of? We believe in ourselves. We've worked on this play. Let's freaking do it. And that stuff builds up. I think over time, the more you kind of coach that way, your players are going to take on the personality of your head coach and believe in themselves. So they're not sitting there thinking, oh, I'm Isaiah Hodgins or I'm Richie James. And, oh, you know, nobody wanted me. I couldn't even make the Bills 53-man roster. Like, no, like, F that. We're going to do it. We're going to make the playoffs. We're going to execute this play. And that all starts with the head coach and why coaching matters so damn much in this league. I'm sure you guys see it too. The older you get, the more you realize coaching matters and a culture matters. Shit. I used to mock people who talked about culture, like, oh, as a bunch of BS. No, like, when it's done right, culture is so important to winning football games.
Culture is a big thing, but I always thought, especially with the previous regime, it was always about, we got to build a culture, we got to build a culture, and then they would go out and run a quarterback sneak on third down. To me, you build culture by what you say, instilling that confidence in your players, making them winning players. And I think the moment Brian Daboll walked into the locker room and what he did week one, remembers that two-point conversion play, but Daniel Jones had a terrible week one game. He nearly lost them a game. He threw a red zone interception, and that famous clip on the sideline of him yelling at Brian Daboll, yelling at Daniel Jones, or giving him sort of a piece of his mind. It was an animated conversation to the time he chewed out a backup offensive lineman. I think it was Jack Anderson, you know, in a game where he sort of jumped off sides. I think it was against the Texans. Like, he's The one thing about Brian Daboll is he's consistent at having different types of relationships with different players. And I think that's so important because not everybody is the same. People react differently. This is the one thing Daboll said. I think it was in your piece, if I'm not mistaken, about how you're a certain way with Daniel Jones about challenging him and, you know, what he did with him at training camp versus a Saquon Barkley where you get him at a ping pong table and you try to, you know, see what makes him tick that way. And I think it's so important, you know, when you talk, when people say build a culture, first of all, the number, you know, you build culture by winning games, and winning games, you make winning plays, you make smart plays, you put confidence in your players. And he did that from day one. And I always wanted to tell people that when people talked about, well, you can't go sign this kind of player, or you can't keep this player, or a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau, who's so outspoken, he's not made for this locker room. It's like, no, that's not how you do it. Everybody's different. Everybody comes into your locker room is different. And I think what they've done is you look at the personalities, you got egos there, but how they've managed it is so awesome. And it's really been from week one. I mean, yeah. Giant fans have been through a lot. We've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of bad. We've seen a lot of good. Ben McAdoo had an 11-5 season here. But it was always like, you know, Ben's not really showing, like, they're winning. They got a lot of talent. But, you know, there's still some question marks about McAdoo. Whereas with Daboll, it's like you're seeing, like, what he's doing with players. It's very, very different. And it's really, like, we've used this word a lot. It's a remarkable story what they've done this year.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head too on really understanding the person and what makes him tick. Kayvon Thibodeau is the perfect example. I mean, the draft industrial complex always takes on a life of its own, and we're all guilty of it. I don't know why this narrative was created that this is a high maintenance, lazy player. Like, when you actually talk to people who've been around Kayvon Thibodeau, I did a big story on him over the offseason and talked to, you know, Tim DeRuiter, who coached him, and Von Miller. And this is a coach who would shoot it straight. I mean, he's not just, you know, looking to pander or, you know, get everybody excited for no reason. He's like, this guy works. He's like, is he a little eccentric, a little different? Yeah. He's gonna be talking about cryptocurrency and, you know, weird stuff that just goes over your head. But, like, he didn't have to play through that injury in college. He could have just completely just shut it down if he wanted to. And you look at film, he's chasing guys down. It was all there to see. And I think that New York and that market and this coaching staff, it's all kind of been a perfect fit for him because he could be himself. They get his strengths as well as anybody. And they're like that with every single player on the team. And I mean, nothing more important than quarterback. And I mean, we forget too that quarterbacks can improve over time. And like Rich Gannon, talking to him, like, he was just a journeyman and nobody, you know, Minnesota, Kansas City. And then boom, at age 36, 37, 38, 39, he just lights the league on fire. So it was really interesting to hear him say how he never had a coach at any point in Minnesota, in Kansas City, like, put an arm around him and say, you're my guy. Like, I believe in you. Let's do this. It was always like you were looking over your shoulder and nobody really believed in you. Then he gets John Gruden in Oakland and everything changed. It was perfect offense, perfect belief system. It's kind of, I mean, his career arc is wild. I guess Alex Smith was similar, right? He kind of went through all those different offensive coordinators and finally got people who believed in him and played well, won a lot of games. I think that there is that effect with Daniel Jones, and Gannon sees it where, like, he went through a lot of shit. I mean, Dave Gettleman, maybe he did the right thing in drafting Daniel Jones, but by God, everything he did around him was pretty much wrong. I mean, he didn't really do him any favors, let alone have a coaching staff that believed in him.
Dave already took his victory lap for that.
I saw that.
Yeah. So yeah. Not surprising, but yeah, with Daniel Jones, I think it's you, earlier you talked about, leadership and guys believing in you. And I think Giant fans just got to look across the hall and look at the Jets. I mean, look at that roster and look at that quarterback situation. That was the number two overall pick in what was a quarterback rich class. And I always say this is he wasn't benched just because of his poor performance. He lost the locker room. I mean, to me, when a coach loses a locker room, it's similar to a quarterback losing a locker room. And with Daniel, it's like, you never have to worry about that. He will never lose the locker room because he's such a hard worker. And look, I'm with you. I think he's earned 2023, and I have a firm seat on the Daniel Jones bandwagon based on what I've seen this year. But it goes back to what you said about guys believing in him. And that's, to me, like, people don't, like you said, people don't talk about that as much as they should when the quarterback position. Like, your quarterback has to be, it's the face of your franchise. He's the leader. He's the guy everyone sort of, you know, attaches themselves to. And it's like, okay, take me home. And what he's done, I mean, you couldn't ask for more from Daniel Jones. Beginning of the season, Ty, you asked me, okay, Weiss, what do you want from Daniel Jones this year, right? I'm like, okay, number one, you got to stay healthy, right? If you're not on the field, you know, you're probably not winning a lot of games. Number two, you know, don't want a lot of turnovers. You know, you've cut it, but let's cut the turnovers more. Okay, what we got to win some games. Number three, right? Ultimately, it's how you win. You know, you got to win football games. Number four, some of the on-field stuff with the quarterback, your pocket presence, pocket awareness, movement, making off-script plays. Well, he did a lot of that, and he's done all of that. Like, I told somebody this earlier. I said, you want Daniel Jones to be a 4,000-yard passer, 30 touchdowns in a season, right? That's fine, dandy. But who's he throwing the football to? You're expecting Richie James to be a 1,000-yard receiver then, because if a quarterback's throwing 4,000 yards, then one of these receivers has to be a 1,000-yard receiver, right? Who's catching these touchdown passes? And to me, that's been the remarkable. That's sort of been like, to me, it's like, okay, he's done everything that I've asked. I can't move the goalpost now, right? So,
yeah. I get the criticism too. Like, I get the fact that this was never really a star in high school. I'm never really a star at Duke. Very, very good that last year. So there is that worry of, like, is it ever going to just burst out of him? Are things ever going to click and be that 4,000 yard, 35 touchdown, Pro Bowl, All Pro quarterback? It's like, you kind of, if you're waiting and waiting and waiting for that to happen, it's probably not going to happen. But he's absolutely done enough to warrant you going out there and being aggressive around him. I don't think that you're going to have buyer's remorse by, like, doubling down in that sense. And, like, I do a podcast with Jim Monas, and he was the director of personnel with the Bills when Doug Whaley was the GM. So they, you know, they didn't even draft DJ Manuel. It was Buddy Nix, and then he retired, but they kind of inherited DJ Manuel. And then their mistake was the next draft, giving up the farm for Sammy Watkins. You know, they kind of went all in on EJ after a year, and that blip of belief ended up backfiring really badly, because then they're kind of scrambling Matt Cassel, Tyrod Taylor, and they're fired in a couple of years. So there is danger in, like, paying up for players around the quarterback if you're kind of kidding yourself and thinking, all right, we can do it. It's the whole chicken or the egg thing. Is it the guys around the quarterback that's making him better? Is the quarterback making all those other guys better? I think Daniel Jones has played well enough to be like, okay, no, we can go make that aggressive trade for this, I don't know, throw out a name, DK Metcalf or somebody like that. We can do something wild and give up a few assets, because he's proven we can win with all these receivers that were taken out of the Kmart bargain bin. Like, he can win with those guys. Let's get him some legit stars and build an offensive line and build a defensive line, build a defense and just try to win football games. So I think you can do that. There's a number, right? It's not like you're giving him 40, yeah, 50 million.
This
a year.
Isn't a Russell, like, Wilson contract or Kyler Murray contract. I think it's a short-term extension. But you're right. He's proven. Like, if I were to ask you this, right, Ty, I don't know how you're familiar, you've been with the last 4 or 5 years of the Giants. Who has Daniel Jones' best receiver been throughout his career? Golden Tate?
I forgot about Golden Tate.
Darius Slayton?
Sterling Shepard? Sterling Shepard or Darius
Slayton? He's been in and out. Even Saquon Barkley has missed a lot of games. I think coming into the season, they've only played, I think it was the number was pretty low. It was like 20 some odd games in 3 years together. It wasn't high. But
the Galladay signing just screwed this team.
Yeah.
You know, very
so
bad.
Many ways.
And then the Kadarius Toney pick. I mean, I thought Rashad Bateman would have been a better option, but to me, it's like, he's earned the right where you can say, okay, I can give this guy 2 years and I can build this roster. You know, and you're not really building around him, because I mean, the stuff they need is essential shopping, right? You need an offensive line regardless who's playing quarterback. You need skilled players regardless who's playing quarterback, right? And you're going to need a solid defense. So they can – they've what this does, in my opinion, and I don't know if you agree, but it sort of expedites the rebuilding process for them where it's like, I got a quarterback, you know, for at least, you know, the next couple of years, and we'll see where we are after that.
Totally. You should always be hunting for quarterbacks, always.
Oh, yeah.
Jalen Hurts was a second-round pick. Right. Yeah. And they just given Carson Wentz that crazy contract not too long before that. It doesn't stop you from drafting quarterbacks, looking for quarterbacks, seeing who's available. I highly doubt, even with your seat on the Daniel Jones bandwagon, if Lamar Jackson was available, are you saying no?
No, right? I don't know. You always look to improve the quarterback position. I actually have a theory, and I go by this, is that every year you should be looking to adjust your quarterback room. Whether it's being aggressive in terms of like a backup or like using a late round flyer on a quarterback. Like if you nail one of those, like you're golden. Like if you can get a guy in the fifth or sixth round and he's impressive enough that a team calls you in his third year of his rookie contract where he just impressed, you know, in a preseason for the third straight year and is like, hey, I want this guy, you know, I'll throw you a fourth, or I like him so much, I'll throw you, you know, another player that could help you. I think that the luxury of being able to have a sort of quarterback, quote unquote, factory, it goes a long way. And I think the Eagles are a great example of that.
So are the Green Bay Packers, you know, with Hall of Famer Ron Wolf through the 90s. They had a top five quarterback of all time, and they drafted a quarterback just about every year. Mark Brunell, Ty Detmer, Matt Hasselbeck, I mean, Aaron Brooks. And that became an asset that they could like move for future picks or future players. There's value in having that player. And who knows, maybe you find somebody in the middle rounds and it does turn out to be a Russell Wilson or a Dak Prescott. It's tough. I mean, history tells you, you're not going to find a starter in the middle rounds, but when it's Shane and Dable in charge, I'd trust that they'd have a shot at finding that guy. And then if Daniel Jones is on like a 3-year, $66, $67 million deal, whatever that number is, that's fine. You can keep looking on that deal. And if he outplays it, then you tear it up and give him some more money.
Yep. Let's talk about the playoff game real quick. Obviously, Giant fans are very confident going to Minnesota. I actually might go to Minnesota. I don't know if you're going to Minnesota or not. I know you're a Buffalo guy. You might be in Buffalo, but I'm going to Minnesota. I do think the Giants have a legitimate shot to win this game. I think the NFC is more wide open than people really are saying. I know they're saying it is wide open, but Philadelphia, I think, to me, looks shaky. As shaky as they've looked all season. Yesterday, it was not pretty. Dallas, we know. San Francisco, look, great roster, but it's still a rookie quarterback, Mr. Irrelevant, playing quarterback for them. And if you're a Giant fan, you're like, look, you beat Minnesota, then you're in the divisional round. It's like anything can happen. And one of the things about the playoffs to me is your quarterback play, how you rush the passer, and third, your coach, right? Your quarterback doesn't lose you the game, play smart football. Daniel Jones has done that all season long. Your pass rush, the Giants' pass rush has gotten a lot better over the course of the season. Thibodeau's on, but Aziz Ojulari is also a really good player. And then Dexter Lawrence having an all-pro year. And they're coaching. They will never go into a game, and I will say they're going to be out-coached. To me, they always have a coaching advantage in the NFC. They might not have the talent, but they do have a coaching advantage. What's your thoughts on this game on Sunday for the Giants? Are you as confident as Giant fans are for them?
I mean, I'm with you on the NFC. I could see any of these teams.
Yeah.
Get into the conference championship game. I love San Francisco's roster. They're loaded. But, man, you're right, bro. It's still hard to, like, picture Brock Purdy, the last pick of a draft, winning playoff games. I mean, we should. I mean, maybe that's the new model for teams. And maybe, who knows, maybe we buried the lead on this podcast. Like, the new model for teams is all you really need is a distributor, right? You just need a point guard at quarterback who just gets into all these different playmakers, and then you're golden. You don't need a star, a stud. But it's hard to imagine, because I feel like to win 3-4 playoff games in a row against really good defenses that are showing you stuff you haven't seen, Is he ready for that? I mean, you're going to have to convert third down after third down after third down. So I think they're susceptible. I like Philly a lot. They have definitely stumbled down the stretch a little bit, but Jalen Hurts is, man, he's been playing as well as any quarterback in the league. I mean, they are the favorites. He's reading the field.
Yeah, they are the favorites, no doubt about that. In my opinion, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
I can see the Giants beating the Vikings though. I mean, that's a toss up game. I mean, they were just out there, right? They easily could have, probably should have won that game. So
they did about 15 things wrong, and if they do one of those things right, then they win that game.
The drops, man, that game. I didn't realize rewatching it. Boy, there's
drops, fumble, drops. Block, punt. Just, I mean, the list of mistakes was astounding.
This is a big picture thing because a lot of your work is centered around people. Why is it so important in your mind to focus on the human element of football? And why does that matter to you so much?
I mean, with Go Long, that's absolutely the focus is long form, feature writing, profiles. All in all, just kind of humanizing this game. I think as we get into, I launched in November 2020, and then even since then, it just seems like there's all the fast food on one end of the spectrum. Like, we need things instantaneously in the form of tweet, sit down and read a story for a half hour and learn something that goes a little bit deeper. So I think whether it's like a profile on a specific player. I tell you, it was crazy. That's why we delayed this a week, right? To see Damar Hamlin nearly die on a football field, it kind of shook all of us. I was there in Cincinnati, and that's a player I got to know really, really well. We got chicken wings here in Buffalo for a story after Buffalo drafted him, and just has an incredible story. So I just think it shouldn't take a player nearly dying on a football field, needing CPR, for us to learn about what makes him tick and what makes him special. This guy has always been inspiring. Always trying to lean into those kind of profiles and then like get the inner workings of teams, like the series on the Giants with the autopsy and the big decision ahead at quarterback. I think there's a hunger to lift up the curtain and see how this league really works kind of beyond the press conferences. And there's a lot of centralized messaging from teams and PR departments. Like, they kind of want a certain message out that can be very surface level. So who loses out? The fans, to know the real shit behind the scenes and what's going down. That's the other pillar of what I'm trying to build with Go Long. So thank you for letting me shill a little bit so we can sell some subscriptions.
Well, I want to ask you about the situation with Buffalo. We'll sort of wrap with this is, you told me of the relationship with Damar Hamlin and everything that happened. To me, I'm with you. It was sort of to see, like, I've watching football for a long time. You watch football for a long time. I've never seen something like that happen on the field where you hear words like CPR and, like, you know. And one of the things I told somebody is, like, I don't know if people have really seen the act of giving somebody CPR, but it is a traumatizing thing. Like, I saw somebody get CPR one time. It's not good. Sometimes, you break the rib, the lung gets affected as you try to, bring a person back to life, essentially. But what, I'm trying to figure out how to word this, like, what was it like for you? Like, you've covered the sport of football. Because for me, it's like, I always, in the back of my head, the dark side of the game. You know that stuff like this happens. We've seen guys' legs bent backwards, and we've seen guys get concussions, and we've seen guys you know, get paralyzed. But I always in the back of my head felt like one day, like, I'm going to see something like this where a guy might actually die on the field. And I know it's happened in the past before my time, but at the moment, like, what were you thinking? Is a guy actually going to die on the field? Like, was that, cause I can't, like, on the TV, I was shell shocked, and I'm not even trying to, like, dramatize it. It was legitimately, like, frightening when I heard CPR. I was like, man, this is bad.
It was mortifying to see it through binoculars from up in that press box. You're right. I've never seen somebody administered CPR in person, and I'm way up high looking down. He was fighting for his life. He had to be brought back to life. I think Tre'Davious White, after that they beat the Patriots, put it so perfectly. He's like, man, I've seen some stuff where I'm from. A lot of players have, but usually it's like the end. I think And I've talked to players who have seen dead bodies or been involved in shootouts and escaped. So maybe that's like the front end when they're kind of avoiding a situation, or the back end when they're seeing somebody dead in the street. Like, that's traumatizing itself. But like Tre'Davious White said, to see it start through the finish, because they didn't know if he was going to live. Right. They load this body on an ambulance and they don't know what's going to happen. That doesn't leave a player. Like, I thank God DeMar Hamlin's okay, because I don't know how there would be a football season in general if it was a different outcome here, and you don't even want to let your mind go there. But how do you even have a season? And the Bills absolutely wouldn't be able to play games.
9 minutes of CPR is 9 minutes of CPR is a long time. Like, 9 minutes is a very long time. People, you know, they think, you know, it's when you actually living through 9 minutes of giving somebody CPR. I've seen it for, I saw it one time. It was a 2 or 3 minute thing at a pool, a swimming pool with a child. And that was like two or three minutes, if I remember correctly. And it traumatizes you. And that was the one thing I remember. I was on this podcast. I said, Sean McDermott, leader of men, this guy was on a knee tearing. Josh Allen, this superhero like figure, just to see him just look traumatized. It scared you. It scared you to the core. Like, man, this is real life. You know, when we're watching football, we're sort of escaped from life, but that was like the real life and death situation that was just insane. I can't imagine somebody like you being there, what it was like.
I mean, it's going to stick with these players for the rest of their lives. And yeah, they're going to play games. Maybe they can harness it and channel it and use that energy for good. I think, you know, DeMar Hamlin's on FaceTime breaking them down before the game, getting the game ball after the game. Like, there's ways you can try to harness those emotions for good, and because you don't have a choice. I mean, you can't compartmentalize. You can't throw that in the back of your brain and forget about it. It's impossible, because it's PTSD. And they've got grief counselors, they've got therapists, they've got people in the organization that can talk to players and help. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard to like make this a celebratory occasion. And yeah, it was a fun win for them the other day, and they were able to use it for good. But a player almost died on a football field, for better or worse. That's going to stick with guys for the rest of their lives. It was, and I, even as somebody who has covered the game for a long time, played the game in high school, even a year of college, and football has like defined who I am my entire life. It is kind of hard to reconcile covering this game and supporting this game when it could have killed somebody on a field. I think the way we do it, though, is, you know, look into DeMar Hamlin's past, where he's from in McKees Rocks, the fact that, you know, he just raised $8-9 million. I mean, that was his life mission, was to use this as a platform for good. He's lost more than half of his friends before they even turned 21. He has seen some shit, and he wants to give kids inspiration to aspire to be something great beyond this dark, dark neighborhood that's gotten better since he was there, but still not the best. Football allows for that. And there's a lot of guys who come from backgrounds just like that. So I guess to kind of press forward and keep kind of writing these stories I was just telling you about that I like to write, it's that football is a great game. It's a special game. It is that outlet, and it can be this beacon of hope for kids. You know, yeah, it's entertaining millions of us, but maybe there's 5 or 6 kids on DeMar Hamlin's neighborhood street that he was able to inspire by just getting drafted by the Buffalo Bills, right? Like, that is something behind the scenes that doesn't see the light of day, that is unbelievably powerful and unbelievably good for society, for humanity, for the entire country.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, Ty, listen, this has been fun. I know you're a busy guy these days. I know you got a lot on your plate, but if you guys aren't following Ty, follow Ty Dunn. He writes amazing stuff. Like you said, you cover football on the field and off the field. You do a great job. And I think we can call each other friends, right?
We're friends. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Good friend of mine.
We're sliding into each other's DMs from time to time. Go. It's got to be when I don't need something, right? Like, I got this story coming out. Let's talk. But well, no, man, and anytime.
you're not going to Minnesota this weekend, right?
No, I won't be there, unfortunately. I'll be here. You know, I'm here in Buffalo. We have a family member getting married on Saturday night. So gonna have to talk to the family on, you know, these wedding dates getting scheduled right now. NFL yeah. playoff time. What are we doing here? But no, it's right. going to be fun.
I scheduled I tried to schedule the birth of my child when it was during the summer and not during football season. So I know what you mean, man.
I love it.
Football guy.
Yeah, she's a keeper then. That's a keeper right there that you found. That's awesome.
Born July 3rd, 3 weeks before training camp. I didn't even miss Giants training camp.
See ya, honey. I can't change any diapers or be around the clock feet. I gotta get out to camp.
Exactly. Wait, Ty, man. It's been a lot of fun. We'll definitely do this again. Like I said, you guys aren't following, follow him at Ty Dunn. His website, great stuff. You can check it out. GoLongTD.com. And hey, Ty, man, thanks a lot. Really appreciate you.
Hey, anytime. All pleasure was all here. Thanks so much for having me. Let's do it again.
All right, thanks.
And that was our interview with Ty Dunn. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Wise at NYG Daily. Follow Nick and Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe.
Before we go. I am in Minnesota.
If you're in Minnesota, hit up Wise.
Yeah, a lot of Giant fans send me DMs about going to Minnesota. I will be in Minnesota. Just hit me up in the DMs if you want to do a quick meet and greet somewhere. I am down. Also, if you want to invite me to your tailgate, I'm also down for that too.
There we go. We'll talk to you real guys quick. Soon.
Georgia okay. or TCU?
Georgia.
I don't know, man. I think it's gonna be a special night. Special night for TCU.
Georgia by 40.
TCU is plus 350. Ethan, you want to make some money?
Put
money.
No.
Donate that to charity.
I was gonna say, pull up the American Cancer Society website.
Yeah.
I had a great weekend, by the way.
I saw your tweets about.
That was nothing. That was nothing. I doubled down on that Jacksonville thing.
Jacksonville, right. I saw your tweets about Jacksonville.
There was another slip, too, that I didn't want to share.
That's fine. We're not going to talk about slips until those companies sponsor us.
Yes.
Correct.
So if your company's initials are FD or DKNG or CZR or MGM, hit our line. All right. Talk to you guys later this week.
Peace.